Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world. A man I've regarded for many years as a champion in that war is, I'm pleased to say, our first guest. He is former Congressman and Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. Alan served with distinction in the 112th Congress. He served in the United States Army for 22 years, including receiving numerous decorations for his service in combat and elsewhere. And it is a great privilege to have him with us to talk about a couple of rather important issues that he's addressing at his website, which is alanwest.com. Alan, welcome back. It's good to have you with us.
It's good to be with you, Frank. It's been too long, so we need to get back to doing this regularly.
We've got to. I'll take you up on it. Thank you so much. Listen, you've been writing, and I need to correct it. It's alanbwest.com, I believe, is the web address where you can find Alan's important posts. You have talked about, among other things, an accommodation, which I find, obviously you do as well, very worrying, on the part of the Obama administration to assorted Islamists. Talk a little bit about how that's manifesting itself and what it means in this war for the free world.
Well, I think a lot of people, Frank, have not paid attention to a lot of the trends coming from Barack Obama. When he first got into office, his first call was to Mahmoud Abbas. His first interview was to Al Arabiya. We remember his trips to the speech he gave before the Turkish General Assembly, and then the speech that he gave in Cairo when he had the Muslim Brotherhood sitting front and center there in 2009 at the Cairo University at his insistence. And when you understand that there are Muslim Brotherhood-affiliated individuals in his cabinet, and definitely not in his cabinet, but in his administration, and the access that they have to the White House, then you look at his policies. How he was so supportive of Mohamed Morsi, the Muslim Brotherhood-controlled government in Egypt, sending them F-16s, M1 tanks, but then when Morsi is kicked out of power, he is being very reticent and not being accommodating to the new Egyptian government under General al-Sisi. You look at his going into Libya, basically support Islamists there, violating the War Powers Act, not getting approval from Congress. He propped up groups like Ansar al-Sharia, who then in turn came back and were responsible for the attack against the special mission compound there in Benghazi, killing an ambassador and three other America, Sean Smith, Kyle Woods, Glenn Doherty. And now we find out that we have just 2 weeks ago evacuated the embassy there in Libya because Ansar al-Sharia has declared that eastern Libya, Benghazi being the center point, is now an Islamic caliphate. But yet here's a president that does not want to go in and fight against ISIS, which all you have to do is listen to what they say and see what they're doing. How can you not build a winning coalition? How can you not want to take action to stop a group such as ISIS? Sitting down with Qatar and Turkey and trying to have negotiations for Hamas, which Hamas is a terrorist organization, we have to understand Qatar and Turkey are two of the largest financiers for Islamic terrorism, as well as what you've seen happen with Iran and the negotiations that have broken down with stopping their nuclear program. So all of those things point to one thing. The president seems to have an Islamist perspective and viewpoint.
I couldn't agree more. Alan, let me turn to one sort of other element of this, and that is the role played in the first term of this administration in so many of those policies, articulating them and advancing them by Hillary Clinton. She's making it sound as though it never happened on her watch. Certainly, she didn't have anything to do with it. She's very concerned about the global jihad. And yet, one of the people who I believe you've just described, very closely tied to the Muslim Brotherhood over many years, Huma Abedin, was her deputy chief of staff and I think a prime contributor to the work that Hillary Clinton personally did on something called the Istanbul Process, which was all about restricting our freedom of speech lest we give offense to Muslims. So talk a little bit about the Hillary Clinton element in all of this. Is there a dime's worth of difference between her and Barack Obama, as far as you can tell?
Well, you know, I guess after they had their little, you know, hug last night up in Martha's Vineyard, there probably isn't. But no, I don't think that there's a big difference. Let's go back and look at how Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, you know, firmly embraced Yasser Arafat, who was the original Palestinian terrorist with Fatah and the Palestinian Liberation Organization. And I'm very concerned about some of the things that we saw happen in that first term that, you know, Hillary Clinton was the Secretary of State, and she said nothing about UN Resolution 1618, which is going to start castigating, you know, any quote-unquote speech deemed offensive against Islam as, you know, punishable and criminal. And that's something that the Organization for Islamic States are pushing. And you never heard Hillary Clinton speak out against that.
To the contrary, she was a champion of it in the Obama administration. Let me turn quickly to another topic with you. You've got so much on your website that I want to call attention to, Congressman Alan West. The Russians are engaged in a pattern of behavior that can only be described as reminiscent of the Cold War and certainly aggressive. What are they doing with these bomber runs in close proximity to U.S. airspace?
Well, it's twofold. First of all, I think it's a probing attack, see how far they can push you and see what they can get away with. We've seen an uptick in that here in the last 2 to 3 weeks. But I think more so importantly, it's an information operation. It's a propaganda, psychological warfare type of exploit, because what Vladimir Putin is showing is that your sanctions aren't bothering me. And he's showing that not just only to the United States and to the international community, he's showing that to the Russian people, that I am defiant, that I am belligerent, and that I am not backing down from standing up to the United States of America. And this is the derivative, and this is the result of what happens when you lean over in an off-mic moment and you tell then Russian President Dmitry Medvedev that I'll have more flexibility after my reelection. This is what you end up getting.
Congressman Alan West, let me turn to one final topic with you, drawing upon your experience and distinguished record in the United States Army. Recently, the U.S. Army Command in Europe announced that I think for the first time in the history of the American military, it was placing in a very senior position a brigadier general from the German military as its chief of staff. What are the implications of it in terms of, you know, the chain of command?
You know, Frank, I believe that if you were to have a foreign national general in like a school post position, like a staff college, war college, something like that, you know, training doctrine command where you have an exchange. But when you have it in one of your more of a combatant command type of unit, that's where we have some problems. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that whole command relationship really does work. You know, you've seen some of these task organized relationships when you go into combat zones where you have coalition command and control of that nature. But, you know, to have it in a you know, regular TONE organization, table of organization equipment, where you have the chief of staff coming from a foreign country, you know, it's going to be some challenges there. You know, I'm of the mindset, Frank, that I believe that as we look at, you know, changing, you know, how we are doing business in our military, we need to have less of a forward deployed military, more of a power projection type of military. And I think that we need to look at all of these big, you know, unwieldy headquarters that we have all over the globe and see where we can scale that back, and we can reallocate those resources really to having a military that is out there ready to respond, you know, at a moment's notice in an instance like what we had in Benghazi or what we see going on with ISIS.
Well, I'm with you on the need for more power projection, and unfortunately the trend is in exactly the opposite direction, Ellen West, as you know. I must say that where we have forward deployed forces from which to project power, I think that probably is something we better try to retain, maybe with fewer headquarter personnel, but I have to say I just can't for the life of me figure out why we would put a foreign national in our chain of command, and in ways that I think would almost certainly have an impact on unit cohesion and morale and maybe even security. But all of this is a subject for another discussion on another day. I'm afraid we are hard out of time. Please come back to us again soon. Next up, another distinguished former member of the United States House of Representatives, Congressman Pete Hoekstra, joins us. We'll take his stock on what's happening in the Middle East at the moment. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.